Now, why do good things or bad things happen to good people is the question being posed this morning in her column in the Kerry's Eye by journalist Breda Joy. Breda is in studio with me here on the programme this morning. Breda, look, thanks for coming in and talking to us. A fascinating column which talks about love and loss and dealing, I suppose, with the loss of a loved one. You started it all by talking about Joe Biden. And what was it about his story that got you thinking about this and the visit that he had last week?
Well, this is a topic that's been on my mind for almost a year now, because Killarney is no different from anywhere else. You get an awful lot of
sad stories coming up, and untimely deaths, and you really feel for these people. But I was biding my time, waiting to write about it, and I sat down last Friday night to watch Joe Biden's visit to Ballina, and he mentioned how in an uncanny coincidence, when he visited Knock, he met a priest, an ex-army chaplain, US Army chaplain, Frank O'Grady, who had anointed his son in 2015, and his son had died of brain cancer. So I knew then that I remembered vaguely that Joe Biden had tragedy in his life before. So I just took out the phone and Googled it, and what year was it again? 1972. His wife and his infant daughter were killed in a car crash. So I said, look, here's this man. He looks like he's at the pinnacle of political success. And yet he has this backstory of enormous tragedy in his life.
And the question you asked was, how in God's name, you lose your wife and your daughter in 1972, you then go on all these years later and have another desperate tragedy of your son dying in 2015. How do you survive all that to end up having the wherewithal to become President of the United States, to overcome all of that grief and loss?
Well, like all of us, I could only relate it to my own circumstances, and I began to think what things brought me through the grief of losing my mother in 1987 when she was just 47 years old. And
what age were you when it happened?
I suppose I was about 26, so I had some bit of life experience behind me to cope. But the youngest,
still not easy, easy at any age, but definitely not easy to lose someone so
and
young.
Some of the younger members of the family were only teenagers, you know, so that it was even worse. It was even worse for them. But and when I watch how people are coping now, and I have to say that You don't have to be brave all the time, and you don't have to presume that people are coping well, because some people find it extremely hard and they sink under it for a while, you know, and they needn't feel bad about themselves for that, because it's, you know, to lose somebody is one of the worst things you can go through in your life. But I found that the people that kind of were still there after the funeral was over were a big help. For instance, at Christmas, my mother died on the 29th of April. At Christmas, a friend came with a flower for the grave, and you know, different people were there for me. So, and I see it now as well. There's great solidarity, I think, from the sporting clubs, if people are lucky enough to be a member of one, but they aren't always. Here in Killarney now, you see the GAA clubs and the rugby club. They're the ones that come to mind, you know, gathering around.
There's a community
people.
There.
Yeah,
people,
there's that's where
network.
That helps people then.
And you said in your piece that one of the things that really helped you was that you looked and you look on your life as a gift from your mother, and that your job is, or your role is, to use it as well as you can in her memory.
Yeah, that's
that one, helped you.
That thing that sustained me, because I felt it was some way that I could live on for her, and I suppose overcome the desperate injustice of anyone not getting the full span of their years, and, you know, by investing as much as I could in my own life then, you know, that I would compensate in some way for her loss then, you know. So I don't know. I suppose I wrote it because I know there's people out there hurting.
Right now, at the moment.
Very, very deeply. And I was trying to think of the things, you know, that helped me get through. But definitely, and I did say that we can be very clumsy or awkward about approaching people who have suffered a death, because you just don't know what to say, especially when it's a senseless, you know, or an untimely death, you know. But even if you make some gesture, like a card or letter, a phone call, or just be quite honest with people and say, look, I don't know what to say, you know, but I'm here for you if you want me. And it is so important, you know, in the months, as I say, after the funeral and that, because all that kind of carries you, all that ritual for a while, you're so busy and absorbed with it, you know.
Yeah, there comes a point then, though, that life restarts. And is that where some of the anger comes from? That, like, how can people be getting on with their lives? How can life be continuing when I've suffered this enormous loss?
Yeah, I don't know whether anger comes from that, but I remember, all right, at the time, your world has stopped, your world has fallen apart, and you see the traffic going up the street, and you see the people walking along, and you feel as if you're, you know, divorced from it. Then, all right, you have that sensation. I suppose I got the anger, not so much from life going on, but that it shouldn't have happened, you know. That,
why is this happening?
Yeah, and I think anybody who loses a person before their time is justifiably angry then. But I suppose the way I counter it in the piece, then it's kind of sobering. Like, we think we're masters and of our own destiny, but everything is just given to us and is on loan to us. And then we have to ask, if we ask, you know, why were they taken? We have to ask, why were they given? And the big word then is acceptance. And that comes at the end of, you know, a long road. And you just have to accept, you know, that they are gone. But you have to also key in the fact that you were privileged to have them
while they were here.
Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned about that word of everything is on loan. That's an interesting way of thinking about it. The perspective, do we need to change our perspective, including our health and the time that we have? It's repeated and it's talked about. Time is luck and we only have one life and you never know when it can go. But we kind of lose that, don't we? Or is it the busyness of our own lives that it's hard to keep that in your mind when you're thinking about life?
Yeah, because you have a heightened awareness when you lose somebody. You have a heightened awareness of the value of everybody else, and you kind of make resolutions that you won't take other people for granted. But you do.
Life gets in the way.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the saving thing. We can't go all around being very introspective all the time.
Yeah.
But it does give a jolt, and I'd like to think that some of it stays with us and that we do appreciate people and that little bit more, you know, when we've experienced a loss then as well.
Yeah, and that's the very important thing. So you're saying the message from it and from Joe Biden's story and him being able to overcome it, he's talked a bit about it as well, the things that have happened to him, that one of the key things is people need to reach out. Continue reaching out, no matter how many years it's gone by, or if you're hesitating, saying, I won't do that now because that might upset them.
Yeah.
That's not the way to go.
And I think instinct is a big thing, because often I'd get a kind of an impulse to ring somebody that I hadn't been talking to in a while or whatever. And there might be a very good reason then that I did ring them, that I'd find out when I do. So I think, and well, I'm a big believer in meditation when I can make time for it, but if you do kind of be a little bit more attuned to your inner life, sometimes you do get the impulse then, or that you're guided in some way to be there for a person at the very time they need you, you know.
What would you say to somebody going through loss right at the moment, that a recent death, or dealing with, I mean, it doesn't have to be dealing with incredibly difficult news?
And I made that point in the article because, you know, it might be a strange thing to say, but like death mightn't be the worst thing, you know.
Yeah.
Like people are living with awful, awful problems, you know, terrible problems. And I think, you know, if it's something that can be changed, like I think a lot of people who suffer from violence within the family and that, like if it's something that can be changed, I think they should, you know, find the courage to reach out, you know, if they can. If it's something that can't be changed and you're just within it, I know from my experience that time does heal. Your life will never be totally the same. You'll always be thinking of the times when the person should have been at a family gathering or whatever. But basically, if you can hold strong, you know, and believe that things will get better, you know, as bad as you feel today, you know, things for people now that are really hurting, having lost somebody, time will do it, you know, and just look.
Do you get better at, does it really heal, or do you just get better at coping with the loss?
No, it heals. Sometimes you feel disloyal that it has healed to such an extent, you know, but it does, you know. But you know that things should have been different, you know, and that always kind of will be with you.
Yeah.
But you just have to accept it and do the best, you know, do the best you can.
Hi Jory, enjoy listening to Breeda. What a lovely honest speaking lady. Wishing her the best wishes of good health and wellness for the future, says Nora in Tralee. And that's the thing, to be, as you said, Breeda, to be conscious of what we've been given rather than what's been taken away from us, including our health.
Yeah, and what if we are in a position that we can share our experience, to do that as much as we can.
Yeah. And that's the, do you think sometimes, what would my life have been like had my mother lived beyond 47?
I often do. I think of where I'd have brought her and what we'd have done. And, you know, like she had reached the stage where the children, we were all just kind of reared, you know. Well, some of us were only half reared.
Yeah.
But, you know, that does stay with you. But that's nothing like the raw, awful grief at the beginning, do you know? And just, I suppose, to let people know that does pass, that does ease, you know, and, you know, confide in your friends. I suppose it's harder for men. Men don't, you know, articulate what they're feeling. Well, they do, they have improved. I see now, I suppose, from having reared a son, they have a good bond with their male friends too, you know. So, you know,
they're getting better, but still can bottle things up.
Yeah,
to an extent, much more than women.
And like, I know that for teenagers, it's absolutely appalling, because to be a teenager is hard enough with what you have to go through with hormones ricocheting around you. But I'm especially conscious of teenagers in situations of loss or family difficulties. You know, it's very, very hard for them.
Yeah, it can be very hard, and very hard for them as they're trying to develop into their own lives to deal with that and move on from there. Well, listen, Breeda, look, thanks so much for talking to us in the programme this morning about it. It's an interesting thing and very vital thing for people to think about, especially that message of, if you can reach out, if you're hesitant, don't hesitate. It can make all the difference for somebody.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, Breeda Joy there, writing a brilliant column today, Why Bad Things Happen, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People, in the Kerry's Eye newspaper.